The Sports Report is brought to you by iHome, the number one brand in digital audio. From Lightning Dock alarm clocks to rechargeable Bluetooth boomboxes and quality affordable headphones, iHome has you covered. To learn more, head to iHomeAudio.com. Welcome to episode number 420 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday on The Grizz. The show is also free in the podcast section of iTunes. And you can follow me on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. That's our handle on Twitter, TheSportsRPT. I'll get to the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup playoffs. I'll also cover the French Open and a tragedy involving a college baseball player. But we begin with the story that captured everyone's attention this weekend, the death of Muhammad Ali, a man who transcended sports, one of the most recognizable figures in the entire world. He was a legend in the ring, but did so much outside of it. He will forever be known as the greatest. I was born in 1977 when Ali was nearing the end of his boxing career. I would have loved to have seen his epic bouts with Liston and Frazier and Foreman and Norton. Those of you who have listened to my podcast over the years know that I still do talk about boxing on this show. Even the sport has taken a back seat to the UFC or MMA in a lot of people's minds. One reason I pay for HBO is to watch boxing. I'm still a fan. Unfortunately, the heavyweight division is an afterthought nowadays. When Ali was fighting, it was a much, much different story. His first fight with Joe Frazier was known as the fight of the century. And I'm going to take you through all of his legendary bouts in a little bit. But what set Muhammad Ali apart from so many other famous athletes was his willingness to voice his opinion and take a stance on social issues, serious topics, things that many others would have stayed away from. Nowadays, we have a lot of pro athletes who say something without really saying anything at all. You know what I mean? We get the standard, I'm just going to go out and give it 100%. Or I'm just doing what's best for the team. Or I'm taking it one day at a time. They don't even give you any insight into their own sport, let alone real world issues. I think many are afraid if they say something controversial or speak out about a hot topic outside of sports that they'll lose their endorsement deals or maybe that next big contract that teams are going to shy away from them. It's a heck of a lot easier to just say nothing at all than to ruffle feathers. It's easier to stick to the old cliches about giving 100% and doing everything for the team and just stay on the sideline. I read a good column in the Washington Post by Thomas Boswell, and he compared Muhammad Ali to some other very famous athletes. He said, Michael Jordan seems like a sneaker salesman. Tiger Woods, a golf obsessive, and Tom Brady, a guy whose big stand on principle is that you can't absolutely prove he deflated a football. I ask you this. How many current pro athletes would be willing to give up 3.5 years during the prime of their careers for something that they believed in? It would most likely be a very short list. Yet, that's precisely what Muhammad Ali did. In 1967, he refused to join the armed forces. He said at the time he had no quarrel with the Viet Cong. Quote, they never called me, he uses the N-word, they never lynched me, they didn't put no dogs on me. How can I shoot them poor people? Just take me to jail. End quote. He was arrested. He was found guilty of draft evasion for being a conscientious objector to the Vietnam War. While he did not go to prison, He was denied a boxing license in every state. He was stripped of his passport, so he couldn't fight in the U.S., and he couldn't travel. He was done. From March of 67 until October of 1970, he did not box. 3.5 years. And that's when he was the best fighter in the world. So think of all the money that he gave up there. In 1971, the U.S. Supreme Court did overturn his conviction, but you can never get those years back. You can never get that time back. After his career ended, Ali continued to travel the world. He tried to promote peace. In 1996, he met with Saddam Hussein in Iraq to negotiate the release of American hostages. That was the same year he was chosen to light the Olympic flame before the Atlanta Games. 2002, he traveled to Afghanistan as the United Nations Messenger of Peace. He received the Presidential Citizens Medal, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. I mean, these are things that you just don't see happening with other athletes. And he did all of this while battling Parkinson's disease, which he was diagnosed with in 1984. He had to deal with that disease for more than 3 decades. A man who was extremely witty, who loved making others laugh, loved being the center of attention, eventually lost the ability to speak. And it was difficult to watch him at times later in his life because of what that disease had done to him. Ali was being treated for respiratory problems last week, and then he passed away late Friday, just after midnight here on the East Coast. He passed away from septic shock. He was just 74. I was actually watching a Dodgers game at the time when the news broke. And then, of course, you know, nowadays everything spreads so quickly. It was all over the TV, all over radio, all over social media. His family said that even after all of his organs failed, his heart kept beating for 30 minutes. His funeral is going to be this Friday in Louisville, where he's from. He accomplished so many things, did so much for others, raised a lot of awareness and a lot of money to fight Parkinson's disease. I talked about his missions trying to promote peace, but he wasn't a perfect man. And hey, all of us have our faults. He treated Joe Frazier very, very poorly, calling him a gorilla, calling him an Uncle Tom. His trash talking went way over the top in regards to Joe Frazier. It was uncalled for. It was unnecessary. You didn't need any more hype for those fights. Believe me. Ali regretted later in his life some of the things that he did to Joe Frazier. And many were upset with Muhammad Ali when he joined the Nation of Islam in the mid-60s, changed his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali. If you go back and read or listen to some of his interviews and some of the comments that he made about white people, about racial integration, he basically said that white people should stay around white people and black people should stay around black people. He was not in favor of integration. So some of his viewpoints I don't agree with at all. And he was also referred to as a draft dodger by some when he refused to go into the army. We've all seen the interviews with Howard Cosell and they're joking around or the footage of him doing magic tricks for kids, but his life was very complex. It certainly wasn't all a big bundle of laughs. My point is that Muhammad Ali had flaws like we all do, but he wasn't afraid to speak his mind, wasn't afraid to stick to his convictions, which is rare among current star athletes. And I thought it was important to touch on those things, what he did outside of the ring, before we get into his career as a fighter. And you can always weigh in on Twitter. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts about Muhammad Ali on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. This is episode number 420 of the Sports Report podcast. I'm Paul Roberts here on The Grizz. That's grizzlyproductions.tv. Keep the five-star reviews coming in the podcast section of iTunes. We always appreciate that. Today's show is brought to you by iHome. They've been with the show for a long time. We appreciate that. iHome has a new weather-tough line of Bluetooth speakers. They are waterproof, rust-proof, and military standard shockproof. What else do you need? From Bluetooth and docking clock radios to portable wireless speakers, iHome combines great value and exceptional quality. iHome also offers a full line of headphones and earbuds for the fitness guru, the traveler, or just for hanging out at home and relaxing. So go to their website, iHomeAudio.com, and you can look at all the great products. You can also check out their apps, their accessories. Plus, iHome is the number one brand in digital speakers. That website, again, is iHomeAudio.com. The sound technology can't be beat. It's the best around. And not only do their products sound great, they also look really cool. They're really sharp. So take a look for yourself. The website, again, is iHomeAudio.com. As I said before, I really wish I was alive to see Muhammad Ali's legendary fight. You know, we've all seen the highlights, and you can go on YouTube and watch him, and ESPN was showing some over the weekend. His record was 56-5, 37 knockouts, but three of the five defeats came very late in his career when he was over the age of 36. Let's go all the way back to 1960 here, give you a little timeline. That's the year that Cassius Clay won a gold medal in the Rome Olympics as a light heavyweight. 4 years later, he would take on the great Sonny Liston in Miami for the heavyweight championship. Liston was tough as nails. He struck fear into his opponents. And he was a 7-1 favorite over Clay, who was only 22 at the time. How about that line? Can you imagine Muhammad Ali as a 7-1 underdog? And most boxing writers thought it was going to be a beatdown. In fact, one New York writer did not even cover the fight. He thought that Liston was going to win easily. As it turned out, Liston did not come out for the seventh round against the much quicker Cassius Clay, who did indeed shock the world. It was a stunner, a huge upset. The rematch was in May of 65, and listen to this story. Due to a dispute over the promoters, the fight between Ali and Liston was moved from the Boston Garden to Maine. Yep, Lewiston, Maine. Can you imagine? Can you imagine a big fight nowadays? A Mayweather-Pacquiao or something like that in Maine? And before everybody settled into their seats, this baby was over. That's right. Ali knocked out Liston in the first round. You've probably seen the famous picture of Ali standing over Liston and shouting at him to get up and fight. Some claimed that it was a phantom punch and that the fight was fixed. That was never proven. Ali retained the title. In 71, after he was allowed to box again, he met Joe Frazier in New York for the first of three classic fights. Frazier, 26-0. Ali, 31-0. Both undefeated. Frazier was a hard-charging, kind of a bull in a china shop type of fighter. He did not back down from anybody. He would take some shots to get inside and go to work. He was as tough as they come, Philly guy. Ali was the opposite. He was flashy, lots of style, lots of grace, extremely quick, fastest hands around, a good counterpuncher. And they always say that styles make fights. And these were two polar opposites. Great for the sport. Frazier sent Ali to the canvas in the 15th round of that first matchup. And Smoking Joe won a unanimous decision, Ali's first loss. His second loss came in March of 73, 2 years later, to Ken Norton out in San Diego. Norton broke Ali's jaw in that fight and won a split decision in 12 rounds. In January of 74, Ali and Frazier met at Madison Square Garden. This time, Ali came out on top with a 12-round decision. And later that year, he would square off with the younger George Foreman in Zaire. Ali was 32, and he used the rope-a-dope strategy and eventually knocked out a tired and a frustrated Foreman in the eighth round. That fight, better known as the Rumble in the Jungle. Ali was beloved by the people there in Zaire. He truly was a people's champ. You've seen the footage of him running in the streets with kids and everyone chanting his name. He loved the spotlight, loved the people, loved the media attention. Probably the best quote in sports history. I mean, you never had to worry if you were going to get a good quote when he spoke with Muhammad Ali. 1 year later, October of 1975, Ali and Frazier met for the third and final time, the Thriller in Manila, one of the greatest fights of all time. Ali said it was the closest thing to dying that he knew. The temperature in the Philippines was 100 degrees. Both fighters battered and beat each other. Frazier's corner stopped it after 14 grueling rounds. Just an amazing bout. In 76, Ali won a very controversial decision over Ken Norton at Yankee Stadium. That was their third and final meeting. Ali won the last two, but again, a lot of people thought that Norton won that final matchup. In 78, Ali, now 36 years old, he lost the title to Leon Spinks in a split decision in Las Vegas. Ali did win the rematch with Spinks later that year in New Orleans. He announced his retirement in 79, but unwisely returned to the ring in October of 1980. At 38, he fought Larry Holmes, the Easton Assassin. It was stopped after 10 rounds. Holmes felt bad after the fight. That fight never, ever should have happened. Ali was done at that point. He would fight once more, December of 1981 in the Bahamas. He lost a decision to Trevor Burbick. Three of his five losses were when he was clearly well past his prime. So the 56-5 record, as great as it sounds, is actually deceiving. And again, Ali missed 3.5 years of his peak ability because he objected to the Vietnam War. He was the first and the only fighter to win the heavyweight championship three times. ESPN ranked him second all time behind Sugar Ray Robinson. Ring Magazine had Ali third behind Robinson and Henry Armstrong. You know, some may bring up Joe Louis. Bottom line, no one in any sport was more well-known around the entire world than Muhammad Ali. Nobody. And he fought in an era well before Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Now you make a stupid video and it could go viral in minutes and everybody knows your name. You didn't have to be a sports fan back then to know about Muhammad Ali. His name, his legacy, it's universal. He was brash, he was bold, he was anti-establishment, he was funny, he's a people person, and obviously extremely talented when it came to boxing, and he will never be forgotten. By the way, a little local note here, from 1972 to 81, he trained at a remote location that's not far from where I live, Deer Lake, Schuylkill County. I live in Berks County, about 1 hour west of Philadelphia, and Schuylkill County is the neighboring county to the north of Berks. I like to call it God's country up there. Simple way of life. There are some very, very secluded spots, and you know that's what he was looking for. He wanted to get away from everybody, eliminate all the distractions, get some privacy, just go to work, go train. So he paid $100,000 and he built a gym and he put some log cabins up there. It was a 6-acre campground. The site's now vacant, but people went there over the weekend to pay their respects. Deer Lake, Schuylkill County. Good luck finding that. Your thoughts on Muhammad Ali, always appreciated on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. Now, obviously, we did a big segment on Muhammad Ali, and you know, I think deservedly so. One of the legends, you know, not just in sports, but again, he was known all over the world. So we focus on Muhammad Ali's passing, and now we move on to NBA action. I decided to watch Game 2 over Game of Thrones Sunday night. I put the job first, as always. What a mistake that was. Oh, man, I got to tell you, this was a Behind the Woodshed special. The varsity versus the JV. 110-77. Good grief. The Warriors stomped all over the Cavaliers. Cleveland should be embarrassed by that performance. Sometimes you lose, sometimes you get embarrassed. And that's what happened Sunday night. I mean, this is the NBA Finals. You're getting beat by 33 points. Absolutely pathetic. Early on, the Cavs, believe it or not, looked okay. They led the game by 2 after the first quarter, and LeBron did not score a point in that whole quarter. He had 14 in the second quarter. Golden State went on a big run in the second, and then Steph Curry picked up his third foul. Cleveland got back into the game. The Cavs trailed by 8 at the half. I thought it could have been much worse than that. Curry then gets his fourth foul after what was an obvious travel by Richard Jefferson. He took 3 steps to the bucket. Looked like vintage Patrick Ewing right there. But they didn't call traveling on Jefferson. Instead, Curry gets his fourth foul with 8:42 to go in the third quarter. It made no difference whatsoever. The Warriors actually expanded the lead with the MVP on the bench. Golden State was up 20 after the third. I mean, this just turned into a laugher. And making matters worse, Kevin Love left the floor in the third quarter. He was placed in the NBA's concussion protocol. He took an elbow to the back of his head in the second quarter from Harrison Barnes. I have no idea how the officials missed the call, but they did. Love stayed in the game until the third quarter when he felt dizzy, and then he went out, went straight back to the locker room. He only had 5 points in 21 minutes, so that's something to keep an eye on moving forward. Here's the bottom line. Golden State, and I said this on Twitter at the Sports RPT, Golden State can get an open look whenever it wants. Whenever it wants. Great ball movement, terrific teamwork. Everybody touches the ball. You know about the Splash Brothers, Curry and Thompson, but they move the ball, they get open looks. For Cleveland, it's a totally different story. Every offensive possession seems like a grind for the Cavaliers. They don't get anything easy. They don't move the ball like Golden State does. And Golden State has more weapons on the offensive end. I mean, that is pretty clear, pretty obvious to see. Sometimes people say the numbers lie. The numbers don't lie from Game 2. Golden State shot 54% from the field. Cleveland, 35%. Oh, man. Get out the rusty nail, stick it directly into my eyeball. And listen, I'm a Sixers fan, all right? So have some sympathy for me. But when we get to the finals, I don't have a horse in the race. I just want to see a close game. First game was 15 points, and now 110-77. Man, this is a joke. The 3-point shots, Cleveland, 5 of 23. Golden State, 15 of 33. So they were plus 30 in points from beyond the arc. Golden State also plus 12 in rebounding margin. You know, we hear so much about small ball. Well, they were plus 12 in the glass. Draymond Green stole the show. I thought in game 1, the bench won the game. In this one, it was about Draymond Green. 28 points, 5 of 8 from 3. And he's not really known as that great of a shooter. Well, he was Sunday night. 7 rebounds, 5 assists. I mean, you know he can fill up a box score. Curry had 18 points, but he only played 25 minutes. He had foul trouble, and then they didn't need him in the fourth quarter. He was 7 of 11. 17 points for Thompson. They each made 4 threes. LeBron had 19, 9 assists, and 8 rebounds. Kyrie Irving, 10 points, 1 assist. I don't know what's going on with this dude, but he needs to snap out of it. I mean, he seems like he's in some type of trance out there, some type of fog. Just no intensity, no energy, and he's not alone. You could say that for most of this Cleveland team. But Kyrie Irving, we expect more from him. 5 of 14 from the field. Game 3 is at Cleveland on Wednesday. I thought this year, as opposed to last year when Irving and Love were hurt, I thought this year would be more competitive. Heck, last year went to 6 games. I mean, this, I thought it'd be a long series. I picked Golden State in 7. This could be a sweep the way this is going. I mean, that was just pathetic on behalf of Cleveland. I know how good Golden State is, but you should not be losing by 33 in the NBA Finals. I don't care if you're playing in Cleveland, Golden State, or on Pluto. I mean, that is ridiculous. You should have just stuck with Game of Thrones. This is episode number 420 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday. You can also find me in the podcast section of iTunes. If you have a second, keep those 5-star reviews coming. Just getting warmed up here on the Sports Report to the NHL playoffs. Saturday night was a must-win for the San Jose Sharks. Their fans waited 25 years for a home game in the Stanley Cup. Finally, they finally got it. And we knew the Sharks could not go down 3-0 to the Penguins. If that happened, series over. Thanks for coming. Drive home safely. Pittsburgh scoring in the final minute of the second period to go up 2-1. So they're 20 minutes away from a 3-0 lead. But in the third period, Nick Bonino was called for a double minor for high sticking. He caught Joe Thornton. The 4-minute power play was almost over when Joel Ward, who's had some big goals this postseason, Ward beat Matt Murray from the high slot. Long shot. Deflected off of Murray's glove. Went in. A shot that could have been stopped. Instead, tied the game up. And then they went to overtime. Penguins controlled most of the action in overtime. But, and this is a fat Albert-sized but, Jonas Donskoy got the puck behind the net, wheeled out in front, and he beat Murray high to the stick side for the game-winning goal in overtime. Donskoy did not have much of an angle at all. He managed to shoot the puck just under the bar. That was the only option that he had. Murray wasn't giving him anything low. But I don't think that Pens fans were too happy with either of the last 2 goals that were scored by the Sharks. Pittsburgh outshot San Jose 42-26. Penguins are still up 2-1, but they had a shot here to go up 3-0 and put this series on ice and did not get the job done. There is no doubt in my mind after watching these first 3 games that Pittsburgh is the better team. Now, the better team doesn't always win, especially in a sport like pinball and ice, a.k.a. hockey. I mean, you see goals go off, somebody's rear end. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. No disrespect to the Sharks, Pittsburgh is the better overall team. Game 4 is tonight in San Jose. If the Sharks win, we have a series again. If the Sharks lose, well, now Pittsburgh's up 3-1 and going back home. So, I think, again, San Jose in a must-win situation here. Let's get some tennis in. Serena Williams still looking for her 22nd Grand Slam title, which would tie her with Steffi Graf for the open-air record Margaret Court has the all-time record with 24. Serena lost in the French Open final over the weekend to number 4 seed Garbiñe Muguruza, 7-5, 6-4. Muguruza broke Serena's serve 4 times, including 3 times in a row. That is stunning. That never happens to Serena Williams. She also beat Serena 2 years ago in the second round of the French Open, and she's only 22 years old. Serena's now 34. I mean, we throw out 34 like it's old. 34, that's nothing. This is the first major championship for Muguruza. It makes you wonder a little bit, just a little bit, if there's a changing of the guard on the way in women's tennis. Serena will have to wait to tie Steffi Graf. She's going to get there. She'll get number 22. The question is when, and then can she get to 25 and pass Margaret Court for the all-time record? The men's final was not a surprise. Number 1 seed Novak Djokovic dropped the first set to Andy Murray at Roland Garros, but the Joker dominated after that. He took the last 3 sets, 6-1, 6-2, 6-4. Now, this victory was huge for a couple reasons. First, Djokovic had never won the French Open. He's now achieved the career Grand Slam. Plus, he's won 4 consecutive major championships. How hard is that to do? Well, the last man to do it was Rod Laver, all the way back in 1969, 47 years ago. Laver achieved the calendar year Grand Slam, which is now in the sights of Djokovic. He's halfway there. He's won 28 straight Grand Slam matches. He's 29. He has a total of 12 major titles. He's won 6 Australian Opens, 3 Wimbledon Championships, 2 U.S. Open titles, and now he gets the French Open trophy. Only Federer, Nadal, and Sampras have more than the Joker. Joker is just too shy of catching both Rafa Nadal and Pete Sampras, who have 14 majors apiece. So this guy is climbing the charts pretty quickly, talking about Novak Djokovic. Finally, a sad story here on episode number 420 of the Sports Report. We talk college baseball. Vanderbilt freshman pitcher Donnie Everett died last Thursday night in a drowning accident. He was only 19 years old. Dispatchers sent a deputy and an ambulance out to Normandy Lake just before 5 o'clock after getting reports of a subject that had gone under the water. Everett had gone to the lake to fish with a couple of his teammates and 2 other people, and all 4 said that he was trying to swim from one side to the other. The sheriff's report said that Everett made it halfway when he started asking for help, but all 4 people said that they thought he was just joking around. One person did go in the water and pulled Everett several feet, but then let go of him and swam back to shore because he was thinking that Everett was joking. When he looked back, Everett had gone under and he never came back up. He was a standout at Clarksville High School in Tennessee. He was throwing 99 miles per hour in high school. Can you imagine that? Let's say you're on another team and you're facing a high school pitcher who's throwing 99. Whew. He was considered a potential mid-first round pick in last year's Major League Baseball draft, but he decided that he was going to go to Vanderbilt instead. His freshman season, he had an ERA of 1.5, 13 strikeouts, and 12 innings. Vanderbilt, if you don't know, is one of the top programs in the country. Big-time Division I baseball. Vanderbilt won the College World Series in 2014 and was the runner-up in 2015. Listen, the summer's here, and I don't want to sound like a Debbie Downer or anything like that, but we all need to be very, very careful when it comes to swimming in lakes and rivers, really anywhere where you don't have a lifeguard. It's no joke. And my advice is simple. If you can't swim, if you don't know how to swim, stay out of the water. I work in Reading, Pennsylvania. I mentioned Berks County. The Schuylkill River runs right next to Reading. And it seems like every summer there's a tragedy. Someone goes into the river and never makes it out. They can't tell how deep the water is, how fast the current is, and they end up drowning. It's sad. So I want everybody out there to have a blast this summer, have a great time. Just be careful, especially if you don't know how to swim. And parents out there, if you have young ones, I would highly, highly recommend that you take them for swim lessons. It's really, really important. I think it's a skill that everybody should have. That wraps up episode number 420 of the Sports Report podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. We're with you every Monday here on The Grizz. That's grizzlyproductions.tv. And of course, in the podcast section of iTunes. Let me know what you think about the show. You want to talk about the Stanley Cup final, the NBA playoffs. Is there any way the Cavaliers can come back? Certainly, you can discuss Muhammad Ali. You can do that on Twitter at the Sports RPT. That's the Twitter handle for the Sports Report podcast at the Sports RPT. I'll talk to you again next Monday. Have a great week, everybody. This has been episode number 420 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv.